George. I am here with my co-host, Ron Meniza.
Good morning, Fran.
And I have a very special guest today. I'm very, very excited. So, you know, as you know, I went to naturopathic college for 4 years. And
I heard that once.
I know, right? There were people there besides me. And I've got one of them here today. I'm so excited. Hi, Jill.
Hi, Fran. How are you?
Great. Oh, my goodness. It's so great to see you. So I have Jill Sanders here. So I didn't have a perfect bio on you. All I know for sure is that you live in Portland now and that you went to NCNM from 1991 to 1995 like I did. And beyond that, I'd love to have a snapshot of your bio. Like, where did you start out and how did you get into naturopathic medicine and what was your path?
So you went way from the beginning, huh? So I have
a degree in library science from the University of Buffalo. And I wound my way out to Portland, Oregon, and had a career in the library field.
Where are you originally from?
Illinois, a little bit in Massachusetts. Went to Southeastern Massachusetts University, UMass Dartmouth, as it was known then.
Okay.
Went to URI for a year, so quite familiar with the Southeastern New England area. My brother still lives in Plainfield.
What? Your brother lives in Plainfield, Connecticut?
Yes.
Oh, go on.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness, that's not that far from here.
I mean,
we go there sometimes.
Yes.
And I have patients from Plainfield. And you went to UMass Dartmouth? You mean the one by the shore?
Yes, the one by the shore, the one down by New Bedford.
The one where the flattest century starts.
That's right.
Right.
I mean, we have a bike ride that starts there, but the Narragansett Bay Wheelmen start their bike ride there. So
Very
I've been there
cool.
many times.
Very cool.
That's where you went. I didn't mm-hmm. realize.
Yep.
Yes. All right. And so you went to UMass Dartmouth, and then you went out to the University of Buffalo and got a master's in library science?
Library science. And then I eventually wound my way out to Portland, where my father is actually from. So I had family out there. Wound my way out to Portland, had a career in library science, working for what was then called a book jobber. But my mother got sick. So many of our stories in naturopathic medicine surround our own or loved ones' health concerns.
Right.
My mother got sick with Parkinson's disease. She went to a professor at OHSU, who's in fact still there. And her path was not the path that I would have desired for her. And so it kind of woke me up to, how are we supporting people who are dealing with chronic illnesses? How are we supporting people who have illnesses that we don't really understand? And my mother passed away, and I was like, what do I do with my life now? It can be different now. My mom's not still around. What can I do? So I went out exploring, and I ended up going to massage school.
That's right.
At the Oregon School of Massage.
Uh-huh.
Thinking I might get into PT, but I thought massage was a good place to say, can I touch people? Can I touch you in that way? And it was a blast. I learned so much about myself in massage school.
Sure.
And then that's where I discovered naturopathic medicine and NCNM. Found out it was in our own backyard. So I applied to Bastyr in Seattle and also NCNM, but ended up going to NCNM.
Yeah.
And that's where we met.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because Portland is a great city. And when I was applying, I applied to, there weren't so many schools back then. And I just applied to Bastyr and NCNM. And I was leaning toward Portland, and mm-hmm. NCNM accepted me first. And then when they did, I called up Bastyr and said, that's okay. I'm not going to, you can halt the application process. So that's great. So then, of course, we spent 4 years at naturopathic college.
We did.
Yeah. That was exciting, wasn't it?
It was.
Yeah.
We did a lot of singing.
We did. That's right. You were the tinctures.
Together. We were the tinctures. And you were a composer and a singer also, and we sang in classes, and we sang at the No Talent Show, and we had fun.
Yes, and it was a question whether that you were supposed to bring actual talent or lack of talent to the No Talent Show.
Right.
But you had an incredible little singing group. It was a quartet. It was mm-hmm. yourself,
Jeremy Appleton, Lori Lee Schoenbeck, and Rick Jensen.
That's right.
Yeah.
And you were fantastic. And they did Barbershop.
And
they were great. And they were called the Tinctures.
Yes. And I think Rick ended up in Colorado, I believe, or Utah.
I think, yeah.
Laura Lee is in Vermont.
I know. I see Laura Lee
sometimes. Oh, that's great.
Yeah, she's you're right. She's doing very well in Vermont. In fact, I think Lori Lee did some incredible stuff. We owe to Lori Lee some of the improvements in the state legislature in the law, their statute in Vermont, that she sat on the floor for a long, long time in the legislature. So she could get a bill passed so that they could be primary care physicians in Vermont.
Right. And I think a lot of states are using Vermont as a model.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Vermont is the Oregon of the East.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much is. It's an amazing, magical place. So, yeah, I still get to see Lori Lee. Rick, I haven't seen. Jeremy, I'm Facebook friends with.
Very good.
Yes, and when we were with Jeremy, we had that fantastic song that of course there was his country version of my great opus, Phenol Sucks.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was he had a great song that he put together, because when we had naturopathic therapeutic class, do you remember K.E. Edmiston?
Yes.
K.E. Edmiston was our she was our naturopathic therapeutics teacher in first year. And she used to be a kindergarten teacher. And so our final was skits. Yeah, that was our final for the class. We had to do skits.
Mm-hmm.
And so Lori, you know, remember Lori Barnes?
Yep.
And myself and Jeremy got together. He sang Country Phenol Sucks. And he sang this great song. And I remember the refrain. Let us tell you about glyceriza. It's a peerless remedy. Let us sing in praise of garlic. It'll cure your malady. You don't need synthetic drugs, my friend. And you don't need surgery. What you need, it comes from nature. It's called naturopathy. That was the chorus. And he wrote a whole song around it. And I lost the piece of paper with all the lyrics on it, of course.
Yes, of course.
And I contacted Jeremy years later and said, do you have the lyrics somewhere? He said, no. I said, do you mind if I try to flesh it out? He said, no. And so I haven't sat down and tried to flesh it out again. And maybe at some point I'll bug Jeremy and, you know, we'll try to put it back together.
It's amazing how much of it is still in your head.
Oh, you have no idea.
Well, and there was also Maria Perillo, who went out to Cape Cod to practice.
We have a story.
Oh, I would love to hear the story.
Maria used to hang around at my bike shop.
Maria?
Really?
Maria was here.
This is Maria's hometown.
Hometown, right.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right, where her mom. So like back before the day, before we went to college?
Yes.
Before she went to Oregon.
No,
as a matter of fact, I had a UPS customer counter at my bicycle shop, and she packed all her belongings into boxes, and we shipped them out from the bike shop to Oregon when she moved.
That's amazing.
And then, I know, and that. So I met Ron in 2005,
mm-hmm.
you know, and we became a couple in 2005. And at some point he said, oh, you're a naturopathic physician. I had a friend who was a naturopathic physician. And I said, what was her name? And he said, Maria Perillo. And I did a backflip, of course, because my story about Maria is that when I was headed out to Oregon, I sent a letter to be posted. I'd send a little poster to be posted at NCNM. So I would have a place to land when I got there, because I had needed to look for an apartment. And I was driving across the country. And I got a response from a person who said, you can stay with us until you find a place to live. And it was Maria.
It was Maria. So, Maria's a kind woman with a heart as large as the outdoors. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I'm assuming she's still living out on the Cape.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think so. I haven't heard from her in a couple of years, but every once in a while we touch base.
Right. Yeah. She was practicing on the Cape. I'm not sure she's still at it. And I think, you know, that she loved animals.
Mm-hmm.
And I think she was involved in some kind of animal rescue on the Cape.
Yeah.
You know, out Central Cape. So I've become a big fan of the Cape, as you can see by my shirt. We go, I always mean to go more than once a year, but I definitely go once a year because we do a big bike ride from Plymouth to Provincetown and then hang around there for a couple days.
So my song story about Maria.
Yes.
Is that in second year when we were studying pathology.
Yeah.
She said that she was reading over her pathology notes and reading over her pathology notes and reading over her pathology notes. And she started saying some of them out loud. And she suddenly realized something about them. So she kept on saying hyperlipoproteinemia, atherosclerosis. Hyperlipoproteinemia, atherosclerosis. What does that sound like?
Lipoproteinemia, atherosclerosis.
Isn't just another differential diagnosis.
Oh!
It's an indication that your lifestyle's really bogus. Hyperlipoproteinemia, atherosclerosis.
You guys are totally geeking out on us.
We are totally geeking out on you.
That's fantastic. That's really great. Oh, my goodness. So, what was it like to be at NCNM in the 90s?
It was a very different world.
It was a different world. And I feel like a little bit like I missed the 90s because I was immersed in... I immersed myself in Portland, Oregon, and I immersed myself in alternative culture. So there were pop songs and popular culture that happened that I missed because I was, you know, African dance, you know, Kite and the Marimba Band listening. We were all listening to alternative music and doing all kinds of alternative stuff. We were going to sweat lodges.
And you were doing Nia. You started doing Nia
You
there,
got it. I was
right.
doing Nia.
Right.
I tried really hard to make Nia go here. Uh-huh. So one of the problems with Nia is, what's the first thing, Ron, when I say to you, I teach Nia, what's the first thing you say?
What?
Right. You look at people and you say, I teach Nia. And they look at you and go, what's Nia? And I had to deal with what's Nia, what's Nia, what's Nia. Nobody knows what it is. Ron, what's Zumba?
Well, everybody knows what Zumba is.
Right.
It's that dance thing, you know, that everybody crazed about. Right.
Right. So so it was, and Nia had an issue with Zumba because Zumba just got really, really popular really fast. And Zumba, I think Zumba's kind of crested. And I don't know. I mean, depending on where you are, I think it's still very popular. But Nia was very hard to keep going because, well, I think something like Nia does well in cities. And because people don't know what it is, you have to spend a lot of time marketing it. And it was really more important to me to market my practice. So, I mean, I had to, there's a fella out in Danielson, which is a small little town in further northeastern Connecticut, who decided he wanted to teach Nia. And he just went at it. He was very, very consistent, and he taught all kinds of places until he actually got it somewhat popular by him. And now he has a studio there. But he doesn't just teach Nia, but he really had to spend all his time getting it going. And I just didn't have the energy and the time to do that when I was doing this. So people don't know what Nia is. And there was some Nia in West Hartford, but it does better in cities because places where people dance. When you get out into the country, you have if there's only like 1 or 2% of the people that dance, that percentage gets much, much smaller when you get in a place like this. And out here, people like to be outside. So that's what we find. So people like, and people are more conservative. So it, yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm not teaching Nia at this time. Yeah.
What about Providence?
Right. So Providence, yeah. I'm not sure if Providence had a Nia community. I'm not sure what the Providence Nia community is like at this time. Boston, I think, still has a pretty decent Nia community. I mean, not only do you need a city, you need a kind of a big city. I think it's still doing well in New York. My friend Carolyn Colas got it going in New York. And Boston had a really solid community. I haven't checked into it in a long time. I've just been
doing other stuff.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. When you're here, you tend to, you don't like to venture too far. And I ride my bike all the time now. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I do that more than I dance now, which is unfortunate because I still enjoy dancing. Mm-hmm. So, Jill, what was it like being in naturopathic college?
We had a very small class, and
yes.
So we were a very close-knit group of people.
Yes.
We had 35 in our class to start, I believe.
Yeah.
And now the classes are 110, 120, 125.
Which is still not huge when you think about, you know, when you think about Rutgers.
Right, but you're comparing yourself to, like, if you compare yourself to medical schools.
Sure.
Those are big classes.
Gotcha. Yeah.
So I think that's the difference. But it was a very intimate adventure, and people came from all over the country. People were coming from, you know, the Northeast, the Southwest. People were coming from Europe. We had people from all over, actually, the world.
Two from
class.
Israel.
Israel, yeah. Yeah. And it was fun.
It was really interesting. Right. We had, and I remember, because when I went to Rutgers, you would ask somebody, where are you from? And they'd say, Atlantic Highlands. They would say Morristown. They would say the name of a town. At NCNM, where are you from? Colorado, Wyoming, Montana.
Right,
you know.
Right, because people were from far, far away.
Yes,
yeah.
That's really interesting.
And depending on us locals to kind of help you negotiate,
right,
and figure out where
get
you
used
were
to where we were. Yeah. Although Portland is an interesting city to navigate, it's very different because if you hang out in the Northeast, the cities here are very old cities. A lot of them were founded in the 15, 16, 1700s. So the cities are based on, like Boston is based on a town square model. So you've got Faneuil Hall there, and then it's a circle. And then you've got a wagon wheel and crazy streets going in every direction. And Boston is like that. Would you say Providence is kind of sort of like that?
Yeah. Yeah, I would say Boston's more of a town circle than town square.
There you go.
Because it just sprouts out in all different directions.
If you go to New London, Connecticut, New London, Connecticut must have been founded in 1600 because it's the same. And St. John's, Newfoundland, because the first place I practiced was St. John's, Newfoundland.
Right.
And same thing. It's like, how do these streets even work? Right. How do you get from one place to it? You have to like get to know the city. Whereas Portland is a grid. You can tell from an address where you have to go.
And how far.
Right.
Right.
That's
my,
right.
My father, I mentioned, was from Portland. He grew up there. And he was in World War II. And after the war, he never went back. He ended up being transferred to New York City at one point in his life.
Yeah.
Like he could, we were in the Midwest for a little while. He could deal with the Midwest. And at one point he was transferred to New York City.
Yes.
And he could not understand how to get around.
Oh,
anywhere.
Right.
Because he grew up in Portland.
Right.
There's a whole section of the city that goes from A to V.
Yes, right.
In street names.
Ankeny to Vaughan.
Yeah, you know, and the streets going the other way go from 1 to all the way out to like 475th way out.
Right.
In the rural areas.
That's right.
So you could always figure out exactly
roughly
where you were going.
Except for some of the main drags didn't quite, like Stark Street didn't, I don't think that fit in the, although I might be wrong about that.
No, that's in Southeast. So Southeast didn't do the
So it was
alphabet.
North,
it was north.
The north, north port, both northeast and northwest
had those
same streets.
Mm-hmm.
Ankeny, Burnside, Cooch. What was D? I don't know. Yeah.
Why can't I? Davis.
David. That's right.
Everett, Flanders, Gleason.
Everett, Flanders. Yeah.
Yeah.
Gleason. Right. Because Gleason was kind of a main drag. Mm-hmm. Flanders. You know that The Simpsons, that Matt Groening is from Portland.
Lots of Portland names.
That's
in
right.
The Simpsons.
Yes.
Yes.
Like Flanders, Ned
right.
Flanders. And there's a few others too. Right. So, Portland was an amazing city in the 90s. And I think it's gotten just bigger and more commercial now since, would you say?
Somewhat. I think that the essentials of Portland haven't really changed. It's gotten more concentrated because of the urban growth boundary and people are doing more infill in the city.
Mm-hmm.
Some new industries are coming. Under Armour is coming to Portland.
It is.
The
wow.
old YMCA that was down at the south part of town. They're refurbishing the whole thing and turning it into an Under Armour center.
No kidding.
So maybe one day I'll get to meet Tom Brady. He's the spokesperson for
Under Armour.
He's a big Under Armour guy.
I met him at the Best Buddies ride on the Cape. Yeah,
nice.
Bicycle ride. Yeah. He didn't talk a lot then.
Mm-hmm.
He was pretty shy and quiet.
I think he is kind of a shy and quiet guy.
Yeah.
He met David Caruso, too. He was friendlier.
Uh-huh. A lot friendlier.
Yeah. So he met famous people because he did this ride. The Kennedys sponsor the Best Buddy ride, and it's a ride where you take somebody who's developmental challenge, and you take them on a tandem bike ride.
Uh huh.
Right.
Yeah.
I even clicked long neck bottles with Ted Kennedy.
You are well connected.
Yeah,
yeah.
How about that?
Yeah.
Those are my claims to fame. Other than that, I'm just me.
Yeah, that's true.
So Portland has some. You know, new building, the east side of the river is getting some big buildings there. But it's still essentially Portland.
Yeah. Well, you know, keep Portland weird.
Yeah.
We didn't used to say keep Portland weird then. That's a thing you say now.
Now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I just felt like I really fit in there.
You did.
And Portland was just really a great place for me to enhance the meanness of me.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a good place for me to develop into.
You fit in well here too.
She does, I believe.
Yeah, you do. Well, we live in a this is an area which is a little crunchier than other parts of the state.
It is, but you still got some of that New Englandy You're not from around these parts, are you?
Some of that.
Got a little bit of that going on.
We got a lot of that going on here. Yeah. There's a mix. There's a mix. But we are, you know, we're
but
in
right
a
where we
town.
Are, yeah.
You know. Right. So you're going to get a lot of different people coming here.
We do.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. We have a lot of different.
Lots of diversity.
Unusual amount. Yeah. Well, where we are right here in northeastern Connecticut, right where we are, we're in the Last Green Valley. So if you look from the plain at night, you will see a dark section that goes up, and it starts roughly in eastern Connecticut, and it fans up, and your daughter's at Mount Holyoke, right?
Yes, she is.
In the
central
Mass.
Right, so that's part of it, too, you know, where Northampton is, and Amherst, that's part of the Last Green Valley going on up, and then does it go up into Vermont, or where does it?
New Hampshire, yeah, if you go into, you know, really pretty much, you know, Brattleboro.
I would consider Brattleboro as part of that.
Kind of a light spot, I would say. Keene is kind of a light spot in New Hampshire, but it's pretty remote up there. For the
right.
most part.
Well, that's nice to know.
Yeah, and there's alternative culture through here. I mean, certainly right here in Mansfield and Willimantic, because we've, like we said, we've got the two universities. We've got the University of Connecticut, and we've got Eastern Connecticut State University down in Willimantic. And Willimantic is the little town that could. So it's an old mill town, and they're always trying to bring Renaissance to Willimantic, and businesses come and go. And we're hoping there's going to be more of a Renaissance in the next little while. So hopefully we'll get to go down and show you. But anyway, so when you were at NCNM, we had a rigorous course. I mean, we were.
It was.
Oh, my goodness. People don't realize. I think that a lot of people went to NCNM thinking that it was going to be very alternatively oriented. And I don't know if they expected to have to deal with the science that we had to deal with.
I think that was challenging and continues to be challenging to some people who come into naturopathic medicine.
They don't realize that it's really medical school.
And it is science. It's science-based.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so we had some, I mean, we had basically all the same classes that you get when you go to, when you become a family practice doctor, plus all the natural medicine stuff.
Exactly. Exactly.
And a lot of the natural medicine stuff is science-based. And we would have people leave who were disappointed, who rebelled against the science-iness of it.
Which is unfortunate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, there's science in everything.
There is science in everything, but not everybody wants to deal with hard science. Some people want to, and there's a place for that. There's a place for energy healing. There's a place for not being so rigorous about specific medical diagnoses. And yet there's a place for what I like about naturopathic medicine is the bridge status of it, that it is a bridge between science medicine and alternative medicine, or, you know, just a larger
scope of intuitive medicine. Yes. But really, even medical doctors who do what they call science-y medicine every day have to depend on their intuition.
Yes,
about
they do.
Where this person is and who this person is and
that's
what
right.
this person's vital force is.
Yes.
And they do it, I think, without naming it.
Right. I think that's true, too. So, okay. Do you, what was your favorite thing about naturopathic medical school?
My favorite thing about naturopathic medical, in terms of subject matter, was definitely anatomy.
Yeah.
And my favorite thing about medical school was, like, this stuff is amazing. Like, the human body and how the human body works is amazing. And I'd been through a kind of, you know, liberal arts education and library school and hadn't really delved in it at all. But when I started to learn it in massage school and then even deeper in naturopathic medicine, it's amazing what our bodies,
how the bodies,
how they're
yeah,
how constructed,
they're
how they function, how they fail,
yeah.
how they build themselves back up, how they cure themselves.
And how they have checks and balances.
Mm-hmm.
And there's like specific instances of when you can have this or this and your body figures it out. It figures out how to upregulate this and downregulate that, and they're connected.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing.
And
it really is.
All that we're learning in science now is even more amazing. My partner is a research biologist at the VA and studying the immune system's response to tuberculosis.
Wow.
In the lungs. And looking at white blood cells, and we're learning so much more about the proteins that are on white blood cells and how they influence the expression of genetic material in fighting disease.
Yeah.
Like down to like the minutest kind of thing.
Yeah.
And it's organized.
Yeah.
And it's intentional.
Right. It makes you like, if you're a questioner of God, it kind of makes you get a little religious. Mm-hmm. It's like, somebody put this together. Somebody had their thinking cap on. There was some engineer involved, a pretty good one.
Yeah.
So it's very interesting. I know that how the level of the deeper you go into it, you figure out what the level of organization is. It is pretty amazing. Mm-hmm. That's really interesting. We'll have to talk more about that. So, what was hard about naturopathic medical school?
The hours were really hard.
Yeah.
For me, the location was really hard because I lived on the other side of town.
Oh.
And the material was hard.
Yeah.
Oh, especially microbiology.
Oh.
Because microbiology was more like I figure things out, and if I can see how something works, it makes more sense to me. But if you just tell me, memorize this, 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 and this. And microbiology was more about memorizing. Like, I couldn't put it together.
I wonder if we could have if we had the right instructor or the right way of looking at it, we could have looked at it in a way.
In a different way.
More, yeah. Because microbiology can be, I think you can take microbiology and look at it that way. It doesn't have to be all about memorization. There's organization. As you say, mm-hmm. you're looking at white blood cells and you're looking at the proteins on the white blood cells. If you can put a story together and make sense of it in that way, yeah, I wonder. There was some teaching that went on that was a lot of memorization, and mm-hmm. That was an issue. That was something that people complained about, that mm-hmm. they hated the rote memorization of things. You remember Dr. Titchrid? Who could forget Dr. Titchrid?
No one.
Right. He was amazing. My mother's usually always right. I still remember some of the mnemonics he gave us.
Right, and because some of that was just pure memorization. I really resonated with Dr. Titchrid because he used language so much. And talking about the atrium of the heart.
Yeah.
So the atrium is where the blood comes into. And so we have atriums in buildings.
Yes.
Because that's where people come into.
Yes.
Right. Sure.
So it's like I could understand anatomy because understanding language. And he loved that. That was part of what he did.
Yeah. And people didn't appreciate him. There were people who didn't like him. And I could not understand why. I thought he was brilliant. I thought he was hysterically funny.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my mother's usually always right. That's, let's see.
Muscular cutaneous.
Muscular cutaneous. Mother's usually always right. Yeah, it's the musculocutaneous. So these are the nerves of the arm in the brachial plexus. So the musculocutaneous, this is the median, ulnar, axillary, and radial. Mm-hmm. So it's a way to remember the nerves. And then, of course, there was old Olympic towering tops.
Right.
And we're talking about it like everybody knows what that is. But there's a mnemonic, and they use this in medical, MD medical school too, on old Olympic towering tops, a Finn and German vault and hop. And then there's a naughty one too, which we're not going to say.
Right.
That's a mnemonic to remember the cranial nerves. You know, what's the first one? Oculomotor.
Oculomotor.
Well, it might have been olfactory, optic, oculomotor, and then, maybe you're right. No, maybe it's optic, oculomotor,
it's gone from my brain. If it's not musical, musical helps me remember.
Right.
If we could have put that to music,
I forgot that hyperlipoproteinemia, and now I remember it. I remember that that's from a long time ago.
You've lost me. You've completely lost me.
And then there was some say marry money, but my brother says be brave, marry Mary. So what that is you set out the old Olympic towering tops, which is the list of the cranial nerves, and then you put some say marry money, but my brother says be brave, marry Mary. And what that gives you is whether the nerve is sensory, motor, or both.
Right.
And I still remember that. The other thing I remember is the bishop with his mitered hat is never right.
About where the valves are. The
you got
mitral
it.
Valve.
Yep.
Right,
mitral
in the heart.
Valve is on the left side. Yeah. Got it. Yep. These are the kinds of things we remember. I know. Right? And
it's frightening.
Yeah. He made us memorize the seven layers of back muscles.
Yes.
He did. But we also had living anatomy, which helped. Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
That
I do remember living anatomy. Yeah.
What was that guy's name? That very slender chiropractor and his wife. They were our teachers for living anatomy.
I haven't thought about them in a very long
time. I know,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
We had living anatomy, and living anatomy was a class where we worked on each other in all the classes. I mean, anytime there was a lab, if we needed a patient to work on, we worked on each other. So we got to know each other in very intimate ways. I mean, we practiced massage on each other, practiced physical therapy on each other, and living anatomy, we found landmarks on each other. And living anatomy was good because, okay, well, this is the quadratus lumborum. Well, guess what? Here it is. And you can touch it and feel it, and this is what it's like.
Mm-hmm.
So that was neat. And we had classes. Then there was some repetition in a lot of classes, and we had some some teachers who were really characters. Like, you actually met Dr. Khalsa.
I met one, yeah, I did.
Oh, right, because Dr. Khalsa came and was dean at Bridgeport for a while.
He was,
yeah.
Although
we met him out in Oregon.
We were visiting Oregon because my cousin got married. My wonderful cousin Sarah. Sarah and her partner Mark moved to Portland in 1995. So just as I was leaving, they moved there. And in solidarity with the gay people of Oregon, they refused to get married until gay marriage was legalized in Oregon. So they got married in January of 2015, mm-hmm. after the statute had been passed in Oregon. So in January 2015, we went to Portland, and you got a hold of me. You were here, and you didn't tell me.
That's right.
I remember that, yeah.
So when Fran found out I was going to be here, she says, well, you have to come see me then.
Yeah.
There
so,
you go.
Right. Yeah. So we put that together. And
yes.
So next time, we'll make sure to put that together.
Yeah.
It's like one of those deals where it's like you're in and out, and you're not going to be there for very long. Mm-hmm. Although I did manage to see Kite, and I did manage to see Eric.
Good.
Which was a good time. Good. Yeah. So we had all these classes. We had Dr. Khalsa. Dr. Khalsa was a serious character. I remember him telling us that because he was born in California, he said that babies in California are issued a frisbee at birth.
Yeah, because he was like from Southern California surfing area.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
But we always had movie reviews and restaurant reviews.
That's right. From him.
Yes, from him during class.
That's right.
So we'd take a little break. We'd have, a long class, and he'd say, okay, time for a movie review.
And no doubt somebody got annoyed about that, but I thought that was really, that we needed the break.
It broke the class up, and yeah.
Because he was, the material he was giving us was dry. I mean, what did we have with him? Did we have clinical physical diagnosis at some point? We might have had CPT. We definitely have pathology with him.
Pathology, mm-hmm.
A lot of pathology with him.
Yeah.
And the thing was, he was very, very smart, and he knew a lot, but he had a very mellow way of talking,
mm-hmm.
and you could get a little sleepy in his class.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't boring. It was just that he was low-key.
He was very mellow, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
In California.
Yeah.
Except that when you talk to him, when you have a conversation with him, he's not really mellow. He's a very passionate, mm-hmm. He believes dearly in naturopathic medicine, and he's very, very smart, and he's very intense. And I mean, you met him. We were in we're on Hawthorne, and we wandered into Powell's on Hawthorne, and who walks in? Dr. Khalsa. What were the odds of that? But it was the coolest thing because Ron got to meet him. I'm like, you know how sometimes you meet up with people? Like, this is very weird that having you sit here at UConn.
That you're so familiar with.
Entirely other part of my life. You know,
right.
And that happens sometimes. Like, a high school friend will visit you at OHSU or visit you, or you'll see somebody in, Massachusetts. It's completely different parts of your life colliding. It's a very strange thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay. So, Jill, when I left naturopathic medical school, I did crazy things. I met up with Bill, remember?
Right.
And
you moved to
Newfoundland.
Newfoundland.
Right.
Yeah.
So I was in Newfoundland for a year and a half, and then I was 3 years in Halifax, and then didn't work out with Bill. So I came to Connecticut. And I saw you. Remember when I was interviewing with Deirdre?
Right.
Who was the last place I practiced. I came and visited you when you were living in Providence.
In Providence. Right.
Right. Because I met your daughter when she was little baby.
Very wee.
And now she is at Mount Holyoke.
At Mount Holyoke.
So, because we're old.
Time is flying.
Oh,
yeah.
My goodness. And then I came and I was with Deirdre for just over a year. And then I took a year off and then I came here. And I've been here for, let's see, since 2001. So what's that, 15 years? I've been
mm-hmm.
15 years in this practice. So that's good. Pardon me. And I've been at WHUS now for... since 2002, so 14 years.
mm-hmm.
And WHUS was, when I came here, it was on the third floor in a much smaller studio, and the technology has changed a lot since we've been here. And then we were in the first year I was here, we moved to another building. We're in the Rosebrooks house, which is down the road a piece. And we were there for a while they're constructing this studio. And now they have this new modern studio and very elegant. And over the years, we got away from vinyl and CDs, although there's still some CDs, as you can see, but we have a lot of electronic stuff. And we're recording our show right now on a flash drive, not even on a CD.
A disc of any kind.
Yeah. I know. And it's going to, you know, I'm going to dress it up and put it up for podcast for posterity. It's amazing what has changed. So anyway, that was my trail. What happened to you? So you graduated. What, you graduated in 95?
1995.
Okay. And then what'd you do?
I did a 2-year residency at the college.
That's right. I remember that.
Yeah. So there are residency opportunities in naturopathic medicine, and they're building up more and more as they get more sponsorship. Medical doctors get their residencies supported by the Medicare system, the National Medicare system. But there was no outside support other than the schools themselves for paying residents.
Yeah.
And residents really are the glue for medical, you know, finishing medical education and then holding those institutions together, because there's so much to do. They're like graduate students.
Yeah.
You know, and graduate students, can you imagine operating a research university without a graduate student's
right.
Not going to happen.
That certainly doesn't
not
work.
Here.
Yeah,
not
going to happen.
That's for
right.
Sure.
Right. They do so much. And mm-hmm. So I stayed on for 2 years at NCNM as a resident.
Right.
And I was, my first year was, you know, first year resident, learning, following doctors, helping doctors run their shifts. Second year was doing my own teaching on our medical shifts, seeing patients, helping students learn in that capacity, and also doing more administrative kinds of things. I was focused on the community clinics and kind of building them up and, you know, looking at infrastructure for those things. But at the end of my 2 years, I was ready to leave Portland, mm-hmm. ready to kind of, you know, start someplace else. And I had been in, I have connections here in Massachusetts and Connecticut, family. I'd lived here for a while. And so thought, well, why not come here? And there was a group of women who had started a health collaborative in Providence. And Maria Perillo knew them, connected me with them. So I moved to Providence and opened a practice there.
Right. So you practiced, that's right, you were practicing in Providence.
In
so
Providence.
You were probably practicing when I saw you.
Yeah.
But that must have been tough because Rhode Island is not a licensed jurisdiction.
Right. Rhode Island is not licensed. People didn't understand naturopathic medicine was, except a few people here and there. Mm-hmm. I had a sense that people were so like grateful and wanting what I was offering, and so was kind of trying to translate that. But like you find when you land in a new place, you're the marketing manager, the office manager, you're the stock orderer, you're the doctor, you're also doing community service, giving talks, doing everything to try to promote the practice.
Yeah.
She still does that.
Yeah.
She's giving a talk tonight.
I am. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah. So the practice got going. And when I left in 2002 to go back to Oregon, I had a second naturopath who was practicing with me, Sheila Froderman, who I think is still over there in Providence.
Yes, she
running
is.
The practice.
Yes, I see her periodically.
Yeah, we had a massage therapist
right.
And... you know, the practice was growing and it was going in the right direction. More and more people were discovering us. We were working with the legislature. And I think that that's really kind of what burned me out the most was the legislative process.
Yes, they still don't have a statute in Rhode Island.
It amazes me that they don't have a statute in Rhode Island. But yeah, so my second daughter was born actually on 9/11.
You have two daughters?
I have two.
I didn't know
you
that.
You just knew Mika. You just met Mika.
Oh, for goodness sakes.
Marcella was born on 9/11. And
oh.
That kind of caused us to rethink things and rethink
wow.
what we were doing and how happy or unhappy wow. I was practicing. And I discovered I was much more happy, like, looking at my bottom line and looking at how much money I was making and how the money was coming in and what I was paying my office person and how many patients Sheila and I were seeing and how could, you know, how much did it go up last month and how much did it come down at all this month? And I was much more happy doing those kinds of things
mm-hmm.
and doing the outreach. You know, and going to committee meetings and meeting with people who are supportive of
as opposed to doing the actual clinical work.
Yeah.
I see.
Wow.
Yeah. So some people are cut out for that.
Yeah.
Business management, accounting.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Marketing. Yeah.
Yep. Right.
Yep.
So we pulled up those roots and we moved back to Portland. And so the practice is still going with Sheila, which is great. And we moved back to Portland, and I took probably 6 months off, and I was the stay-at-home mom and raising the girls. And I started teaching at the Oregon School of Massage, just part-time. Laurent Schex got me into that because he was like, I'm tired of teaching anymore. You want to teach their path classes, your pathology classes.
Yeah.
So I jumped in and started teaching their pathology classes. And then a position came open as their director of education. And I thought, well, that sounds like a great job. I could do that. And so I was the director of education at the Oregon School of Massage for 4 years and learned. That was like my other really ramped up time of learning. You know, you have these periods of your life that are just really concentrated times of learning and growth. And that's what happened to me at the Oregon School of Massage. I was there for 4 years. And then the position as clinic director came open at the National College of Natural Medicine, NCNM.
Right.
And I moved over there as their clinic director.
Wow. You were the clinic director for NCNM. And when it was still NCNM, it's not NCNM anymore even.
Right, right. So I was clinic director for about 6 months. And then I became clinic operations manager. And I just kind of my fiefdom kind of expanded until when I left there, I was dean of clinical operations.
Wow. So we
were overseeing the community clinics and all the physical clinics for acupuncture and for naturopathic medicine.
So, okay. And so you were at NCNM there. Uh-huh.
Yeah. And then while I was at NCNM, we can talk about the transformation of NCNM.
Yes, please do.
That's an amazing thing that has happened.
Yeah.
But I left 2.5 years ago just because I felt like I had done what I could do, either through Peter Principle or whatever it might be. I had done all that I could do at that point, and I wanted to make one last career move to move into more conventional medicine, into a bigger environment, and I moved over into Oregon Health and Science University.
Yeah.
And have been there for 2.5 years.
Right. So.
And what do you do there?
Yeah.
Well, for the first 2 years, I was managing their oncology clinics, their outpatient oncology clinics. Mm-hmm. So infusion clinic and also medical oncologists meeting with their patients. So very different from what I was doing at NCNM. But in a lot of ways, much the same. Taking care of the front desk people, making sure the supervisors are doing their jobs and happy, all the HR stuff, watching the bottom line, all those kinds of things. And just recently, I moved to an office downtown Portland, and I manage their intake center where all of the referrals for outpatient care at OHSU come into, and we make sure they get to the right clinic. Mm-hmm. All the medical records come in, and we get them to the right clinic. And it's a good space for me to be right now.
So you're working in, are you doing a lot of, electronic records?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. And that's still not a pretty thing.
Uh-huh. The electronic records. Electronic records are tough. I do have an EHR program.
Mm-hmm.
And, I think the people who like it the least are the clinicians.
Exactly.
We don't like, because they're unwieldy. That's my problem, that they, when I type into it, I'm just unhappy navigating the system, and you wind up spending so much time looking at your computer that you're not looking at
your patient.
Mm-hmm. Right. So do you know, I've done a very silly thing, and you know, I didn't start out. And so somebody who's at NCNM now, they're starting out doing their chart notes on their laptop.
Yes.
And I didn't start out that way. I started out writing with a pencil and paper,
right?
Or a pen and paper. And so we have a program now, and at some point in 2006, I began doing my chart notes on my laptop, but just on Word files, and that became a lot easier for me because did you know that your handwriting, the legibility of your handwriting, deteriorates in inverse proportion to the length of time you've been practicing. So the quality goes down, down, down while you, as long as you've been practicing. So my handwriting was pretty illegible.
Right. So the more you do it, the more illegible it becomes.
Yeah, oh yeah. Yes. Because you're writing so much so fast all the time.
Right.
It's horrible.
That's so the doctor's handwriting.
You got it. So yeah. I have terrible doctor's handwriting, and we do have one section of, and I still have paper charts, and I am holding on for dear life to having paper charts, even though, you know, I have printed chart notes in them. We still have physical charts because mm-hmm. I am just so afraid that, and you know, in New England, we get weather. We sometimes mm-hmm. get hurricanes. When Irene came through and when Sandy came through, we were without power for over a week. So I want to have physical records, okay?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Those are not going away until somebody says, Fran, you can't do this anymore. We have the physical records. So we use the EHR, and I use it minimally, and my staff is a little annoyed with me. They use it for the inventory, and they use it for
billing.
Record keeping and billing. They use it for all of that stuff. And then what I do, I type my chart notes into a Word file, and then I have one of my staff copy and paste it into the EHR. That's what I'm doing right now. So the EHR is tough.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
But NCNM and OHSU are on the same EHR system.
So that's good. So you can look back and forth. That's
right.
Because
really that's one of the big things that's really important right now is interoperability.
For sure.
Being able to save, to share information.
And that's one thing around here. We have several different groups, and I don't know if they talk to each other, like if they have access to each other. So we have Hartford Healthcare, and Hartford Healthcare that's based at Hartford Hospital, but like Wyndham Hospital here down in Willimantic is part of the Hartford Healthcare system. So they're all one system. Then we have UConn, which is based in Farmington, mm-hmm. but we have some UConn stores stuff here, and then there's a whole UConn system. And then we have St. Francis, which is another system. And then we have ECHN, which is yet another system. So I don't know if all those systems talk to each other. And I am not patched into any of those.
Right, right. But when you talk to patients, that's what they want.
Yeah.
They you know, there's this.
They want the interoperability.
Right, because there's this myth about patients that they don't want to share their information.
Yeah.
Doctor to doctor.
Oh,
that's
no.
wrong.
I don't do that. Yeah.
They want their doctors to
know everything.
What's going on.
And we handle that. I mean, you know, I do it the old fashioned way. I just fax for records. And mm-hmm. and the patient, what's funny is that the patients will go to their doctors and say, can I have my record of this and this? And for some reason, the doctors don't. They don't respond to the patients as well as they do to me using a HIPAA-compliant fax form and mm-hmm. faxing it over, and then they get it back to us. And we also, my staff are like hawks. We have our fax forms, and if the fax forms age, if they're like, you know, a few days old or if they're a week old, the doctor's office gets called. So we bring them in. We have workarounds for my minor Luddite-ism.
Well, and that's unfortunately what's happening all over because there are so many different systems that have popped up in the last 10 years.
Right.
The Affordable Care Act really kind of like incentivized a lot of different companies to try to get into this business.
Yeah.
And so now we have a lot of different systems that don't talk to each other.
Yeah, right, right. And so that's right. So how can you get St. Francis to talk to Harvard Healthcare? You're still doing it the old fashioned way if you don't have access to one.
Which means delays and if you're dealing with emergency situations.
That's really tough.
Delays that can happen. Yeah.
That's true. Yeah. I mean, emergency is not as much of an issue for me as a naturopathic physician. I mean, if somebody has an emergency, we just send them right on. You know, if in an emergency situation in an MD's office, mm-hmm. you want to have quick access to something.
Right.
Yeah. But, you know, we had an emergency situation in my office at one point. We called 911. 911, you know, everybody came and they mm-hmm. took care of the person. It turned out okay.
It was all good.
So,
yeah.
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 So you're a person who's a naturopath. So how is your role as a naturopathic physician inform your role at being at OHSU?
Well, I think in a couple of ways. I am clinically trained.
Yeah.
So the doctors have a certain amount of respect for me because they know I'm trained as a physician and I can talk to them and I know what they're talking about.
Yeah.
Also, my staff can also turn to me with questions. So if they don't understand something or they want more information about a disease process or a situation with a patient, I can inform them about that.
Yeah.
And so it really does help me in both when I was managing the oncology practice and also in the intake center.
Yeah.
Having that perspective. And then it also teaches, being a physician and a naturopathic physician, I think especially, teaches you how to talk and listen to people.
Yes, it does.
And so I think that I experienced a lot of growth in that area. I can't stop asking questions when I talk to people.
Yeah. Right.
And then what?
Right.
You know, and how does that make you feel? And when did it start? That's my big question. With my kids come and they're not feeling well, it's not like, where does it hurt or, you know,
What's like, the onset and provocation?
When did it start?
Yeah. What's the onset and provocation?
Right.
Can you tell the quality? Is there any radiation? What's the severity? Can you tell me about the timing? That's part of the song.
Right. And they're like, can I just stay home from school?
Right. So how old is Marcella now?
Marcella's 15.
Oh,
and she's a sophomore.
Oh, my goodness. In high school.
In high school. Right.
Yeah.
Yep.
Wow.
Yep.
That's
and like as you said, Mika's just starting her freshman year at Mount Holyoke College.
Yeah. The little baby is at Mount Holyoke.
Yep.
Oh, boy.
Yep.
So naturopathic medicine is interesting. And there's, like we said, a lot of people do different things when they leave naturopathic medical school. One of the things that they do is they don't stay in practice. One of the things we see in Connecticut, one of the issues we have in Connecticut is that we have a very old statute. Our law was it came into being in 1923. So we're still drugless physicians. So we have very good insurance coverage, but we can't prescribe, we can't deliver babies, and we can't do minor surgery. And we have been...
So you still can't prescribe, like, antibiotics or
nothing.
Heart medication nothing. Or
nothing? No thing, not a thing, nothing, nada.
Wow.
Really frustrating because we have this thing called Lyme disease here, which
is like
a big,
yes.
big deal, mm-hmm. and she can't do that.
And and we have... Lyme is political and controversial, and people don't want to treat it, and people want to say it's hard to catch and easy to treat, and that's just not true. Mm. And there's a belief that there isn't such a thing as chronic Lyme, and you know who Dietrich Klinghardt is, right?
Yes.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So he will tell you that is not the case. He's in Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
So
who is Dietrich?
Dietrich Klinghardt.
Oh,
he's
Dietrich.
A big naturopathic. He's a naturopathic physician. Yeah.
Yeah.
And he practices in Seattle, and he's one of the terrific Lyme literate docs you can go see. And I think he's in the movie Under Our Skin.
Oh, he is. Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So he's a big deal.
Yes.
Mm.
So, right, in the state of Connecticut, you mm-hmm. know, naturopathic, it's very frustrating because you have to, if you feel like you can diagnose Lyme disease, you can see the erythema migraines and you can't give the antibiotics. Or if you want to, you think your patient needs to be treated for chronic Lyme, you can't treat them. So we have a wonderful physician in Middletown, Rick Leva, who heads up Connecticut Center for Natural Health, which is a practice in Middletown. And he has been spearheading the statute effort for years. We still haven't gotten there, but we push and we push. So one of the things that happens is people leave Connecticut because they're frustrated because they feel like they're practicing with one hand behind their back.
So are there naturopaths in Connecticut who do not want to prescribe, who do not want to support
I'm
that
not
expansion?
Sure. I actually don't know the answer to that question. Mm-hmm. I think most do. I think most are interested. We'd like to be able to prescribe.
Because in Oregon, what keeps happening in a good way is that our formulary keeps getting expanded.
Yes.
And
that's
we're able to include more conventional medications in a formulary that we can use if needed.
Right. The reason we want to be able to prescribe is because we want to be able to manage people's pharmacy. And, people come in on polypharmacy. And one of the things that happens is people come in wanting to get off medications. And you can't wean them legally if you don't have the right to prescribe. So that's one of the things that's frustrating to us.
So you can't adjust their prescription in any way.
No, mm-hmm. You have to say you have to say talk to your doctor about this. You can make a recommendation, but you say you have to okay this with the prescribing doctor, or else you could get in trouble because
mm-hmm.
we're not supposed to be working with pharmaceuticals. So, in terms of that is something you see. You see attrition in naturopathic medicine. People who are not doing clinical practice. And who don't even stay with medicine. So, Jill, how do we see the future of naturopathic medicine?
I see it as really making more inroads, like we talked about Lori Lee Schoenbeck in Vermont.
Yeah.
And the work that's been done at NCNM, now NUNNM in Portland, and then also Bastyr, also at the college in Arizona. Becoming primary care physicians.
Yes.
There's a primary care shortage in this country.
That's
and
right.
Naturopathic physicians can fill much of that void.
We absolutely can be. I mean, people will write me as their primary care. I tell them, I can't really be your PCP. And they're like, Fran, you're my doctor. That's it. And mm-hmm. and I argue with them. I can't be your PCP. Your insurance won't let me and the state won't let me. Too bad. You're my PCP.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So those changes are coming slowly in. But, you know, like a champion like Lori Lee has done it in Vermont, and the Oregon Association of Naturopathic Physicians and NCNM have made it happen in Oregon.
Yeah,
so NCNM is a patient-centered primary care home under the auspices of the Affordable Care Act and the Oregon Health Plan.
That's fantastic.
So patients who are underinsured or on exchange types of insurance plans can come and be seen by naturopathic physicians, and naturopathic physician can be listed like they can be in the data bank as their primary care physician.
Great. That's fantastic.
That's great. And they do this in Vermont also?
In Vermont also.
Yeah.
Well, we should research Vermont and see how they've done it.
Right. Well, we can talk to Lori.
There has to be a method.
Lori Lee.
She's our friend.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. She was somebody that like I was actually somewhat close to going through natural, because she was a yoga instructor and she liked to dance and she was
But what Lori Lee will tell you is you have to play in their sandbox with them. You have to be nice to them. You have to be respectful to them.
Yeah,
you have to play in their sandbox and help them. While I was at NCNM, I was on I got appointed to a governor's committee on how the Affordable Care Act was going to be rolled out in Oregon.
Yeah.
And my presence on that committee and NCNM's presence and naturopathic medicine's presence on that committee had an effect on how fast we could move forward in those next steps.
That's great. Yeah.
You have to help them. Wow. So they'll help you.
Yeah, well, one of the issues that we have is that people are just working so hard just trying to keep their practices going. And we have, you know, we have at any one time in Connecticut, we have roughly 200 people in practice, and that's it. Because we have some people who don't stay in practice. We have some people who leave the state. Then you have your hardliners who, I mean, I'll probably practice unless something terrible happens to my ability to practice or, you know, the market, I will continue to practice. So there are some people who are going to be diehards, and then there are some people who are just able to continue to practice. And then you have, people who stop. And so at any one time, you only have 200 people. And so you don't have a whole lot of people who can spend a lot of time sitting on the legislature floor getting the getting the statute passed, which is unfortunate, which means that a lion's share of work goes to a few people. And that's one of the issues we have. And then you need money to pay the lobbyists.
You need to hire a retired lawyer to do that for you.
Yeah, well, we do have lobbyists. We have lobbyists. Mm-hmm. We have at least one. I know we don't have a lot of lobbyists, but that's part of the issue. So that's a great thing, that to have naturopathic physicians as primary care physicians. We deserve to be. We are smart enough. We have a breadth of knowledge that is very helpful. We have basic practical knowledge. We save insurance companies money because we talk about lifestyle. I completely agree. All right. So we have to wrap up. So, Jill, it was so wonderful to have you here on Radio Naturopath today. My friend Jill Sanders, naturopathic physician at ND, who now you're, what is your title at OHSU?
Manager.
She's a manager in what?
Of the intake center, the ambulatory access services. I manage the ambulatory access services
at Oregon Health Sciences University. So it's really fantastic to have you here.
It's great to see you.
You too. You're in our little corner of the world. And you have been listening to Radio Naturopath here at WHUS, 91.7 FM, WHUS stores. And we will be back next week with more Radio Naturopath. Tonight, I'm giving a talk at the Mansfield Community Center at 6:30 p.m. on fitness nutrition. And if you, we would love to see you there tonight. And if you can't make it, I will be talking about that topic next week here on Radio Naturopath. All right. And we will be back next week with more Radio Naturopath.